Wednesday, July 8, 2020. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado, and we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. Hope your week is off to a good start. Hope that you and your family and your friends are all doing well right now. And more importantly, I hope that if you are here in the United States, that you survived a wild 4th of July. Because wow, if you were here, you know what I'm talking about. That was insane. I mean, we saw where all of those stimulus checks went on Saturday night here in the States. This country, all the fireworks going up, honestly, it looked like a war zone here. We blew up all of the fireworks this year. Like, we were throwing so much junk up in the air. Jameis Winston was like, hey, ease up. Like, you guys are getting a little bit reckless throwing those fireworks up everywhere. I mean, we were shooting so many things. Carmelo Anthony was like, hey, can you guys have like a little shot selection? Like, I'm not asking for you to shut it down completely, but can you have like a little selection about what you're throwing up there? Man, I hope you survived. I hope you made it through a wild 4th of July. And I hope that you poured out a 40 for Jason Pierre-Paul's pointer and thumb pinky.
Well, the good Lord didn't bless my wife with all 10 fingers. She's only got pointer and thumb pinky.
But we are happy to have you here with us today. You know, we actually do have an interesting day tomorrow in the world of sports history. Because there's been a lot of talk over this summer about who is the greatest player of all time in NBA history. And of course, there is an era of people that believe, and they're always going to believe, that it is Bill Russell. I mean, he has the rings, right? There are a majority of people that would give that honor to Michael Jordan. Went 6-0, had all the scoring titles. There is a younger generation that is anointing LeBron James. And then there is actually another group that just looks at the stats. They just look at the record book, and they swear that Wilt Chamberlain is the greatest player in NBA history. And I mean, look at his stats. Do you realize Wilt Chamberlain is the only player in NBA history to score 100 points in a single game? Well, yeah, you probably knew that. But did you know he was the only player to average more than 40 and more than 50 points in a season? I mean, Wilt Chamberlain won 7 scoring titles, 11 rebounding titles, and 9 field goal percentage titles. And as bizarre as this might sound, for like this big guy that was this inside scorer, Wilt Chamberlain led the league in assists one time too, just to kind of prove he could do it. Chamberlain is also the only player in NBA history to average at least 30 points and 20 rebounds per game in a season. He actually accomplished that 7 different times. I mean, that's pretty amazing. He is also the only player to average at least 30 and 20 per game over the entire course of his career. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain was named the league's most valuable player 4 times. How can you even argue with that? Well, I've got one argument for you, actually. Because tomorrow, on July 9th, back in 1968, Wilt Chamberlain became the first reigning NBA MVP to be traded following the MVP season, because that was when he was shipped from the Philadelphia 76ers to the Los Angeles Lakers. Now, I want you to think about the players that we talked about being in that kind of GOAT conversation, whether it's Bill Russell, maybe Michael Jordan, maybe even LeBron James, and tell me which ones would be traded in their prime. None of them. Nobody wanted to trade those guys, but Wilt was traded. He wanted to play with more stars. He wanted out of Philadelphia. So the Sixers actually let him go. I mean, for all of his accolades, for all of the records, for all of the stats that Wilt put up, he did tend to get beat in the big games. So then Wilt, of course, went to Los Angeles. He joined Jerry West. He joined Elgin Baylor. And he still only won one single title with the Lakers. You can't just go off the stats, is what I'm saying. Wilt Chamberlain getting traded right after winning the MVP. I think that's actually another example of exactly that. Hey, if you'd like to contact the show, I don't know, maybe tell us what superstar you think is a little bit overrated in your book. We would love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us over there. Both of the handles are at dailydosesports. And I tell you this every week, if you need to reach out, want to contact someone, maybe you've got a question about sports, maybe you've got some feedback for the show, I'm not saying we're going to do what you tell us to do, but you can at least reach out to us. We would love to hear what it is that you have to say. Also, remember, we do now place a video portion of the podcast over on YouTube, so make sure you go over and you check those videos out over there. Subscribe to the Daily Dose on YouTube. Like some of the videos. Upvote some of the videos. Thanks to everyone that is going over and watching the videos, but we are just putting a little snippet of the podcast over there every week, so make sure that you check that out. Also, you know you're doing that online shopping because we're not going to the malls. We're all just ordering on like Amazon or whatever. So if you're going to do some more online ordering, you might as well go to tpublic.com and order some Daily Dose gear over there. And TeePublic is doing a ton of sales every single week. We've got Daily Dose social distancing masks over there. And they're kind of cool. For one, they're really comfortable. But for two, you can still smile at people when you're wearing those. But we've also got Daily Dose hoodies, Daily Dose sweatshirts, Daily Dose t-shirts, and you can order them in whatever color that you want. That's the cool part about TeePublic. And we do have other items over there, coffee mugs, laptop covers, cell phone covers, a number of items at TeePublic.com. Just search Daily Dose and scroll down to our logo. You can find exactly what it is that you need. Hey, today on the show, we actually have something a little bit different for you. Yes, we're going to cover some sports news that has been coming out over the past week, but then we're going to be joined by a friend of the show, and we're going to be taking a look back at some sports history today, but we're going to be taking a look back in a very, very different way. You'll see what I mean here in just one second. But before we get to some sports news, some of you might know that we have a Daily Dose investigative team. I'll be honest, I didn't plan for it to happen. I didn't create this Daily Dose I-Team. It just kind of happened organically. The Daily Dose I-Team, they go out and they find the stories. They find the angles. They dig around. Sometimes they find the recordings, the sound bites, whatever. The Daily Dose I-Team goes out and finds the things no one else can find. And we have a number of members of the I-Team that contribute stories, contribute ideas, contribute information. Sometimes they even contribute like top secret files or whatever it might be. But we've got a few people out there. We've got Mike. We've got John. We've got Rob. We've got Travis. Even young Jimmy is working his way toward being a very junior member of the Daily Dose I-Team. But a couple of weeks ago here on the Dose, we had a high school cheerleading coach on. Douglas County cheerleading coach Lauren Borgmeyer stopped by and she actually taught us a few things about the world of cheerleading. And it was a really fun conversation. I know that for me personally, it gave me some respect for a sport that I just don't know all that well. And when we talked to Lauren, her situation is like kind of crazy. She was a cheerleader at Wichita State, and her assistant coach and husband was a cheerleader at the University of Kansas. Yes, they have two cheerleaders in the same household. And so we actually received a question from the Daily Dose I-Team after that interview. And it was a question that I clearly missed in doing the interview because, hey, that's just how the I-Team rolls. They just send out things that no one else thinks to send out. But here is the question from Big Rob, of course, of the I-Team. In fact, Big Rob might be the president of the I-Team. Is the I-Team a republic? Is that like a monarchy? Do they have a king?
Yeah, a king.
What do they have? I don't know. President? Let's say Big Rob's the president. I don't know. Anyways, Big Rob had this question for Coach Borgmeyer. Coach Borgmeyer, you have two former cheerleaders, two cheerleading coaches in the same household. Do you have like family cheer-offs? Is that a thing? And I actually forwarded that question to Coach B, and I wanted to let you know her response. Here is her response. We do not, for the record, have cheer-offs, but we may see who can do the most tucks in a row after we have had a few drinks. Hey, I'm telling you, living in a cheerleading household must be a wild, wild adventure. But these are the things that you learn from the Daily Dose I-Team. You're not going to get them anywhere else. You're going to get them here, though. Right now, let's jump into some sports news. You know, I'll be very honest. I haven't wanted to talk a whole lot about the virus and the canceling of things every single day in sports Because honestly, we only do an hour each week. I can't just sit here and read every single thing that's being canceled for the entire 60 minutes, right? That's not fun for anyone. Just ask ESPN right now. But there is now talk that with all of the recent spikes in states across the country, maybe the college football season should be bumped back to the spring instead of being played in the fall. I mean, the variety of looming issues has increased momentum within college football to maybe move games back to the spring. Proponents say moving to the spring increases the likelihood of an effective vaccine or maybe treatment being developed, and it would be more likely to have fans in attendance for the college football season while also allowing doctors, scientists, and just humanity in general extra time to better understand what is going on with the pandemic. College football would also be given the chance to watch the mistakes possibly made by professional sports leagues returning before they do. The Ivy League says they are considering a 7-game spring season, and there are sports experts right now saying, well, if the Ivy League does it, everyone else is going to follow. I mean, that's what happened when they canceled their NCAA tournament stuff. As far as basketball, the Ivy League did it, so everyone else did it. I'm just going to go on the record and say this. If college football moves their season to spring, it's going to be a disaster. I mean, let's think about a few things, shall we? First off, you're talking about postponing the season until after winter. Isn't winter when all the sicknesses go up just anyways? When do people get sick? When it's cold, when it's winter. They get better in the summer. They're probably going to be better toward the end of the summer than they're going to be toward the end of the winter. Second, college athletes that are getting this, I know we're getting a lot of positive cases, they don't even know they have it. They have to be told that they have it. They aren't suffering physically. So quarantine them or whatever you have to do, but they're not suffering in a physical way. So I don't know that that's an issue. Third, you're going to ask college football players to play a season and then what? Go straight to the draft, all banged up? Or go straight into off-season workouts for next season, again, being all banged up from this season? I mean, let's think about that. If you're Trevor Lawrence, if you're Justin Fields, why in the world would you play? We just saw last year, Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa was injured in November, and he still had time to recover and be drafted in the top 5. That would not be the case if they moved the season to spring. Not to mention the fact that logistically, you'd have to scramble for things like stadiums. You'd have to be trying to put your travel plans together. And you just know the NFL is hoping they'll do this. Because if they do, I'm telling you now, the NFL will be sliding their games to Saturdays real fast. And they'll be owning the entire weekend. I don't think this is a smart move for college football. I know that we are told the Ivy League is super smart. I don't think moving college football to the spring is going to be all that smart. Speaking of stupid, the Pac-12 has taken additional steps to offset the financial damages inflicted on their athletic departments by the whole pandemic situation. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott told the media this last week. Now, some of the moves the Pac-12 has made include tapping their emergency funds, extending salary cuts for Larry Scott and for his senior executives through next year. Athletic departments, though, could be losing tens of millions of dollars in revenue if there is a disrupted football season. I mean, if you have limited sales for tickets, if you have limited seating, if you have game schedules being changed or maybe even dropped, you're gonna lose a lot of money. I mean, Larry Scott, who earned $5.3 million in the latest reporting year, came out and told everyone that he took a 20% pay cut for the final few months of 2020, and senior staffers in both the conference and the network divisions also took 10% pay cuts. Those cuts have now been extended through the 2021 fiscal year, albeit at different rates. But Larry Scott said he would be willing to take a 12% salary cut, which would actually translate to a little over $600,000 based on his reported compensation. Here's the thing, though. Larry Scott is the highest paid commissioner in the country, which is kind of weird because the Pac-12 conference is one of the lowest performing conferences athletically. Hey, Larry Scott can beat his chest all he wants about taking pay cuts if he wants to. He can sit there and say, look at all the pay cuts I'm taking. Hey, I don't know if you guys have noticed, but I'm taking all these pay cuts. I don't care. You can say that stuff all you want. Your conference isn't performing that well, and your conference isn't making any money with that crappy Pac-12 network. So while he can say this all he wants, I fully expect the conference to probably buy Larry Scott out of his contract completely and replace him with someone that does the job better. I mean, you can act like a martyr now, Larry Scott, but I bet you might actually be a martyr later when you pay for all this with your job. Let's move over to the NFL, where the big news of the week was that the Kansas City Chiefs and quarterback Patrick Mahomes have reached an agreement on a 10-year contract extension worth $450 million. That, of course, ties him to Kansas City through the 2031 season. The deal is the biggest in NFL history. The Chiefs picked up Mahomes' fifth-year option for the 2021 season back in April, putting him under contract for the next two seasons. So this isn't going to start yet. But the 10-year extension puts him under contract with the Chiefs for the next 12 years. Mahomes becomes the fourth quarterback to receive an extension before the start of their fourth season since 2011. Think of some of those other quarterbacks that happened with. Ryan Tannehill with the Miami Dolphins, Carson Wentz with the Philadelphia Eagles, Jared Goff with the Los Angeles Rams. They were all signed early as well. Hey, there is no question that Patrick Mahomes deserves all the money that he can get. He's a superstar. And he did it on the biggest stage, leading the Chiefs to the Super Bowl and leading them to a victory in the Super Bowl. But I will say this. Be very, very careful. Because I want you to think about what else those quarterbacks that I just named have in common. Ryan Tannehill in Miami, Carson Wentz, Jared Goff. I'll even add guys like Drew Brees, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers. What do they all have in common? They took a lot more money. And their team suffered for it. Because this is the new NFL. It is how business is done. The most dangerous teams have their quarterbacks on rookie deals, and they are spreading the wealth around to a stacked roster. Now, this isn't going to hit Kansas City right away. But I'll tell you right now, the Kansas City Chiefs are on the clock. You better win now, because all of that help, all of that talent that was around Patrick Mahomes this last year, it's going to be going away. It's just a matter of time, because he took a huge, huge deal. Finally, after saying over and over that it would never happen, the other big story this week in sports, the Washington Redskins are now saying they are likely to change their team name. Team owner Dan Snyder has been under more and more pressure in recent weeks to change the name, given the national focus on human rights and social justice after the death of George Floyd in Minnesota. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell said in a statement Friday that the league has had ongoing discussions with Snyder and was very supportive of this important step of changing the team's name. Now, we can say that, but we all know that wasn't going to do anything. You can gripe, you can say whatever you want. Last week, though, we actually got some traction on this thing because FedEx, which has naming rights to the team's stadium under a $205 million deal, requested that the team change its name. That wasn't all. Other sponsors like Nike and Pepsi also are reportedly under pressure to sever ties with the team unless they change their name. On Thursday night, Nike removed all Redskins gear from their online store. The other 31 NFL teams were listed. A search for Redskins came up with nothing. That wasn't it. The three minority owners of the Washington Redskins say they are now seeking to sell their shares in the team because they are not happy being a partner with Daniel Snyder. Hey, here's the thing. This was the only way the name was ever going to change, because Daniel Snyder has always said he will never change it. And people can scream all they want, But until money got involved, until corporate sponsors got involved, the team wasn't really going to do anything. When they feel the burden financially, then it might change. I think we actually have a chance of it changing. But until those things all fell into place, he wasn't going to do it. He had no intention of doing it. Now, here's the interesting part, though. We're already hearing some suggestions for the new team name, and it's going to be very interesting to see where this could possibly go. We're hearing the Washington Warriors. You know, I'm hearing some pushback on that already. I've heard the Washington Red Tails in honor of a group with the Tuskegee Airmen. That might not be bad. We've also heard the Washington Senators. I mean, I don't know about Washington Senators. That to me sounds like an insult. I don't want anything to do with Washington Senators. But I mean, I don't know. I came up with a few names. I don't know if they're very good, but I'd just like to throw out a few names. What about the Washington Rednecks? Rock flag and eagle! Is that a bad thing? That's okay, isn't it? Rednecks would be fine, I think. Or maybe in honor of our current president, what about the Washington Orange Skins?
Thank you.
That might be a little bit better, a little bit different. I don't know. What about the Washington Monuments? I mean, sure, the woke crowd would eventually tear them down soon, but it'd be a little bit fun while it lasted. Brief side note, I just kind of noticed this. I was thinking about this last week. The Washington Monument, it barely even looks like George Washington.
I am the smartest man alive!
But if I was going to pick one team name for that franchise, I'd probably go with the Washington Generals. I mean, they're already losers. You might as well make them lovable losers like the Washington Generals that lost every single time they played the Harlem Globetrotters. I think we might have a winner right there. Okay, coming back, with the sports world being mostly quiet right now, we thought we might take a look back at some sports history. You know we love our sports history here at The Dose. You know, we're going to be looking at some of the most memorable and impactful moments in the history of sports. But here's the question that I have for you today. What if they hadn't gone quite like they did? We're going to be looking at some alternative possibilities when we get back. Joining us right now is a longtime friend of the Daily Dose, a guy with a sense of sports history, and that's why we actually wanted to have him on for this show, because we're going to be looking back at some sports history today. But what if that sports history hadn't turned out the way that it did? So Mike from Castle Rock has stopped by to take a look at the ways that our world might be completely different if there were just some slight changes that had taken place. Mike, thank you so much for stopping by the Daily Dose. We always enjoy your visits.
Appreciate it. Love coming in.
Let me ask you this. Before we get into some sports history and we start talking about some what ifs in sports history, how are you holding out right now with all of the crazy? We don't have any sports, Mike. I know you're like me. You're dying. How are you holding out? You got something you're watching? What are you doing?
You know, it's not as bad. We're fortunate, and I use that term loosely, that it happened this time of year.
I agree 100%.
You and I think number one through five top favorite sports are pro and college football.
Sure.
So we're not being affected there, although who knows what's going to happen during the seasons. But it has been different. You know, it is a typical lull unless you're a big baseball fan, because, you know, the basketball would have crowned a champion and NHL would have crowned a champion. And of course, we miss March Madness and things like that.
So, right.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see how things hopefully turn out for the better for the rest of the year. But you just never know. It's different times for sure.
It is. It's really different. And it's something so crazy that who would have ever seen anything like this coming? And so we're in this lull, like you said. But you know what? We have lulls every single year. It's just not this way. It's different because usually we have a baseball lull. But that's different.
Right. Well, to give you an idea how sports starved I am, I watched golf a couple weeks ago.
Yes, I know. And I'm doing the same thing. I'll be like watching a NASCAR race with nobody in the stands, just like, there's nothing else on.
Although I will say this, I was thoroughly entertained by that match between Mickelson and Woods and Manning and Brady.
It was phenomenal.
It was great. It was very good TV.
And it was something I think, especially when that came out, it felt so needed. Like, can we just have anything?
A distraction. It was dying. A perfect distraction. Yes.
And, you know, then we had The Last Dance and we had a little bit of that. And now we're kind of back to dry. But we do have some things maybe to look forward to. It sounds like the NBA is trying to get going. Major League Baseball is trying to get going. I realize they're going to have obstacles. They're going to have, let's call it what it is. They're going to have positive tests and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with it. Here's the thing, though. There's so much money on the line. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to have to figure out how to deal with it. Because you're talking about billions with a B. I don't think you can just say, hey, we give it a shot, you know, no go. I think they're going to have to figure it out. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch. How's this going to go? Where's this going to end up? Where are they going to do this? I don't know. I'm trying to be hopeful. I don't want to get crushed if it doesn't happen. And at the same time, I'm really just going, oh, can we please just get something to feel excited about, something to look forward to? But since we don't have that thing going, we are going to do something a little bit different. Mike, you and I have talked about doing this show for quite a while. We've talked about this at length because I've said, you know, I'd really like to do this show. I think this could go a lot of different directions, and I think we could do this a number of different times. Sports is so crazy because there is such a fine line between winning and losing. And there are certain people we think of as, oh man, he's a huge loser. No, he was an eyelash from being a huge winner, and vice versa. How easy would some of these situations have been to be just the opposite? We could have seen so many massive changes. And I realize it's kind of the butterfly effect. Like if one minor thing changes, a ton of things change. I get that. But today we are going to look at what might have happened if a few small things had gone just a tiny bit different. They might have changed the world completely. We might have a completely different narrative and mindset to a number of major sports stories. Now, we might not agree on the outcomes. You and I might look at the situation and say, I think it would go this way. I think it would go this way. That's fine. And you may come up with your own opinion. Please feel free. Reach out to us. And if you have some insight on what you think would have happened in some of these what ifs, we would more than love to hear from you. Please reach out. We'd like to hear what your take on it would be. I'm sure you have some great insight as to what you might think would happen. But Mike, we're going to start off, and we're going to start off in the world of Major League Baseball. And let's take a look at some things that, what if it had gone a little bit differently? What if this had changed a little bit? I'm going to throw one out to you to get started. Let's get started. We're going to go back to the year 1986, okay? Where one of the best players in baseball history made a mistake that haunted him for the rest of his life. Hey, Bill Buckner was a really good baseball player. He never struck out more than 40 times in a season, but in Game 6 of the 86 World Series, the Boston Red Sox give up a lead. It was 5-5 in the bottom of the 10th. The New York Mets are up. There's two outs. There's a runner at second, and Mets batter Mookie Wilson is at the plate. Wilson dribbles this little grounder just inside the first baseline, and Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner cannot come up with the ball. The Mets win 6-5. Buckner, now at the time you called him a goat. Now we think of goat as a different thing. He was a different type of goat. He was the dog. For years, Red Sox fans hammered him. They blamed him for the Mets going on to win in Game 7. They win the series. But what changes if Buckner makes that play? There's a number of things to think about. Because if you watch that play, the dribbler kind of ekes inside the first baseline. I don't know, even if he makes it clean, I don't know if they get Mookie out. Mookie's fast. He can run. I don't know if you get him out.
Well, of course, everything gets magnified on that play. They still blew the lead.
Oh, the pitching was horrible. You
got to look at the whole aspect of it. It just gets blown out of, you know, the magnitude of it is immense because of such a glaring play. I mean, it's a little league play, essentially.
Yes, yes.
But there's so many other factors in it.
Well, and he biffs it. I think Mookie might beat him, but let's say he makes it and let's say he gets the out. It's still a tie game. You're in the 10th inning. You're still playing on, and the Mets have a ton of momentum because this game was over. You had poor pitching, allow the Mets back into it. I'll be honest, as much blame as he takes, I don't think it changes a single thing. If he makes a play, I think the Mets still win because they're pitching. The Red Sox pitching is what let them down. I don't think it changes anything. Here's the only difference. Buckner isn't persecuted his whole life for being this huge loser.
His
entire life. And you know what? He was a really good player, and I think he's a really good dude. But man, he got hammered. Boston was relentless. I think that's the only difference. I think they still lose. I don't think it makes any difference. Buckner doesn't get blasted at every turn.
Instead of the whole team taking the blame, it's one person.
Yeah. I don't know. I lay that loss at the feet of the pitching for the Boston Red Sox. Mike, you've got one for Major League Baseball as well. What do you have?
This is going back even further.
Okay.
One of the all-time greats, of course, Ted Williams. You can look at him in the record books, and his records are, you know, he's definitely a Hall of Famer. He served in two wars.
Yeah. Well, and Ted Williams might be the best pure hitter ever. Just pure hitter. His numbers are, just for going to the plate, are insane. And not only did he serve in those wars, he was really good. Like, he was a great pilot in those wars. No, that's a great point, because if not, is Ted Williams like that Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays kind of guy?
He
already has those numbers.
Yeah, he's very, very well rated in most categories. But if you project everything out, including his lost time, he's top 5 to 10 in almost every important category.
Easily.
It's incredible.
Yeah, no, Ted Williams is a phenomenal player. And I think he kind of gets forgotten in the greatest of all time conversation because he did lose some prime years. He's going over and fighting. The crazy part about Ted Williams, as good as he was, as great of a batter specifically as he was, I think he's one of the greatest hitters ever. He is in the Fishing Hall of Fame because he was a phenomenal fly fisherman. And like you said, he serves in two world wars, and he was a really, really good pilot. Not like, no, he went and did. No, he was good at it. Ted Williams was a phenomenal athlete, just good at everything he did. How different might his career have been, though, if he's just fighting during peacetime? He's not dealing with that. He's not having to leave and give up all that time. And can you imagine, like right now, the NBA is talking about restarting. And what are they saying? Well, who knows who's going to be rusty? And who was Ted Williams rusty when he got back from those wars?
Different era. I mean, you talking about, the spoiled athletes of today don't right. hold a candle to the toughness of what we had in the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Just such a different world. Can you imagine Ted Williams comes back and is like, dude, I don't know. Just got to knock this World War II rust off of me first. I mean, I guess, but no, it's just a different era. Some interesting things to think about, though, in the what if category. Mike, I'm going to move over to basketball, and more specifically, I'm going to move to college basketball, where in 1993, the Michigan Wolverines were on a mission because, yes, they had been blown out by Duke when they were the fabulous freshmen the previous year, but they were back. They had made it all the way to the final game against North Carolina. And hey, they're going to win it all. They're going to get it done as sophomores. But with 19 seconds left, Michigan's in a little bit of trouble. UNC is actually the team up. They're up 73-71. Pat Sullivan misses a free throw, and Michigan superstar Chris Webber pulls down the rebound. And let's get this on the table, because he immediately travels as soon as he grabs the rebound. He takes three steps. The refs like just swallow their whistles. Webber dribbles into the front court, and thanks to some of his teammates and thanks to just nobody wanting the ball, Chris Webber calls a timeout that Michigan didn't have. Technical. UNC shoots free throws. They make them. They get the ball back. Game is over. Hey, call it what it is. Webber choked. No question about that. But what if Chris Webber doesn't call the timeout?
Well, you've got the Fab Five probably listed higher than they are right now as far as all-time college NCAA teams.
They were so good, and I know they kind of get grief. Well, they never won at all. Well, they were sophomores. They were babies. But what a talented team that was. Here's my concern for that situation, because it wasn't a done deal. You were still down by two. And you look at that and you say you have 19 counting down, 15 seconds left to go get a shot. I know that the thinking is, had he not called the timeout, Michigan would have scored and won the game or whatever. Maybe they hit a three. Maybe, you know, who knows what could have happened. Obviously, there's a million different scenarios that could have happened. First off, Michigan couldn't shoot threes. They were like 5 of 15 from three-point range. So that's not a great percentage. But Michigan had had a ton of success, specifically with Webber going inside. So maybe you feed it back to Webber and he goes in and he gets the bucket. The problem for Michigan in that situation, and if you go back and watch it, nobody wanted the ball. Jalen Rose, I love Jalen Rose, especially when he was at Michigan. He was a phenomenal. He's hiding in the corner. He wants nothing to do with the ball. Ray Jackson has fouled out. Jimmy King is the only one that maybe is going to go get the ball. Chris Webber ends up with it because nobody else wants it. So we can sit there and say, well, Michigan was a score. They were so disoriented. They didn't know what to do. I don't know why. I don't know why that wasn't a rehearsed situation, but they didn't know what to do. Let's say they get it to Webber and they go inside and score and they tie it up. UNC is probably still getting a last shot. Ray Jackson has fouled out. Hate to say, maybe it wouldn't have changed anything. I don't know if it changed anything aside from, again, maybe Chris Webber doesn't look like a dope. But other than that, I think Carolina might still win the game.
That's very possible. Yeah, and that's the fun part about these discussions is, like you said, the butterfly effect. There's so many different possibilities that emanate from a small change.
Oh, yeah, because who knows what happens if he goes into the front court. Maybe it's just a five-second call because he didn't know what to do with the ball. Either way, Michigan still turns it over. I don't know if that team in that situation was the best prepared that they could have been to go find a way to win the game. And because of that, I don't know if the timeout drastically changed anything for it. As weird as that sounds, because you called a timeout and you ended the game, it might have still ended the exact same way. Carolina was a really well-coached team. Not that Michigan wasn't well-coached, but you could see down the stretch, here's a clutch situation. They didn't make a clutch play. Everyone went and hid from the basketball. Nobody wanted the basketball. Strange, strange night in that final championship game. You got anything in college hoops? You want to go NBA?
I do have something in college hoops.
Let's have it.
A certain tall man named Hakeem Olajuwon lands in America, I believe in New York. It's freezing cold.
Yeah.
He's from Nigeria. He's not used to the cold. He goes outside. The person that was supposed to meet him there did not show up. He happens to come across a porter who is also from Nigeria and said, look, here, man, I'm here to play American basketball. Here's my three choices of the colleges that he was supposed to go visit. And his fellow Nigerian said, oh, well, you need to go to Houston because that's going to be much warmer than those other two places. That was the deciding factor in Hakeem Olajuwon.
What's warm?
To go to Houston.
Yes.
I think gave birth right there to the the Houston dominating team.
Yes. And what a phenomenal team that was. And I think Hakeem Olajuwon, even after college, I think Hakeem is such an underrated player. I think he, in the NBA, like when we talk about greatest, you talk about some of the guys you'd want. If you were drafting all time, who, you know, you're going to get Jordan, you're going to get Jabbar, you're going to get maybe Chamberlain or Russell. Hakeem Olajuwon is as good as any of those guys. Hakeem Olajuwon is a phenomenal player. If not for that porter saying, hey, you want to go somewhere warm, make sure you go somewhere warm. Yeah, we could have had a completely different thing because that Phi Slamma Jamma team, I know they didn't ever win the big one, but that team, oh my goodness, they were so loaded and he was so good. Houston got so lucky.
That they were warm?
Yes, because otherwise there's no way he's going there.
St. John's and Louisville were the other two possibilities, and obviously not being anywhere near the climate of Houston from what he was used to in Nigeria, a friendly porter from a fellow countryman and a warm climate.
Well, and can you imagine what that loss of him going to Houston means to a program like a St. John's or a Louisville who are, hey, we're dying for someone like that, one of the best ever? Can you imagine what he would have done for their programs? Not only is it him going to Houston, it's him not going to those other two schools.
It's a double effect.
Goodness, yes. No, that's a phenomenal one because, like I said, Hakeem Olajuwon, I think he's super underrated. He was such a great player at the college level. What could you even do with him? I actually, I have another one here in a few minutes. We might be talking about Hakeem Olajuwon a little bit more. But no, that's a great one because the basketball landscape in college – and of course, going forward into the NBA would have been vastly different if he ends up going to one of those other schools. Houston gets lucky. They get him. They get Clyde Drexler. And then they get goofy head coach Guy Lewis, who was such a goofball that he never could quite win the big one for whatever reason. But Houston was such a great team at that time. You have anything else college basketball? Or are you going NBA?
Mine kind of translates from NCAA to NBA.
So okay, perfect. NBA. Does it have to do with the city of Boston?
Yes, it does.
I bet we're going to have the same one here.
Yep.
Let's jump over to kind of, like I said, the college NBA thing. Because back in the mid-80s, the Boston Celtics were rolling. They had won the NBA Finals in 81, 84, and 86. And after that 86 championship, Boston drafts Maryland superstar Len Bias. He overdoses on cocaine on draft night. The following year, after Bias dies, the Celtics go 59-23. They make it to the finals, but lose to the Los Angeles Lakers. And after that season, they draft Northeastern superstar Reggie Lewis. Hey, the Celtics should be set for years. You've still got the core, the veterans, those guys, but now you've also got Len Bias and Reggie Lewis. You should be completely set, except for that's not how that went, because Lewis, he played six highly productive years. Then he passes away at the age of 27. Now you have Larry Bird's back is a mess. Kevin McHale's feet are completely destroyed. Danny Ainge is gone. Robert Parrish is retired. The Celtics don't get back to the NBA Finals for over 20 years. How much is the basketball landscape different if Bias and Lewis stay healthy and actually playing basketball?
That it was a huge factor. Bird was quoted as saying that if Bias would have, you know, played, that he probably would have retired a couple years earlier.
Sure, and he could have. And you also wonder, if Bias is playing, can you take the pressure and some of the minutes off of Bird? Let Bird not kill himself. He doesn't have to break his back. Maybe you almost rest him, and maybe he's that veteran down the road that maybe makes a big play that you need in a big game, as opposed to he's just struggling to run up and down the floor.
Yeah, and a lot of people today don't know who he was or how good he was, but to give you an idea, Krzyzewski was quoted as saying, there were two players in the entire time I've coached that I feared going up against. It was Michael Jordan and Lenny Bias.
Lenny Bias was such a phenomenal player. He was so strong. And in a way, in kind of a similar way to Jordan, we had just scratched the surface in college of what he could have been. Like, we saw Len Bias doing some great things, but he was going to be so much, his game was fit to be in the NBA. It was a perfect fit for the NBA. Len Bias would have been so, so good. And here's the crazy thing to think about. If you have Len Bias in 87, when the Celtics lose to the Lakers in the finals, I realize that Lakers team is stacked, but could the Celtics have given them maybe a better game with a great rookie, maybe coming off the bench and giving you clutch minutes? And that, I mean, Len Bias would have been a pain for the Lakers in that series. Now, I won't say the Celtics are just winning title after title, but think about the Eastern Conference at that time. You had the Pistons starting to come on. Hey, the Celtics would have been good for a while. They could have run title after title, at least on the Eastern side.
Conference championships.
For sure. Yep. Unfortunately, they lose those guys. Now, maybe if they have both those guys, if they have Lewis and they have Bias, maybe the Pistons aren't a thing. Maybe the Pistons can't ever get past the Celtics. Maybe we have Jordan's Bulls trying to contend with the Celtics, and maybe we end up with that Len Bias-Michael Jordan rivalry that we were all hoping for someday. Can you imagine how good that would have been? Mm. I mean, they played each other in college.
Such a waste.
Oh, so, so bad. Wish we would have seen it. Could have been a monster rivalry. And, I mean, Jordan only gets to see the Celtics one time in his whole career in the playoffs. That first year that he's in there, and, you know, it's a five-game series, and we didn't get nearly as much as we wanted to. Can you imagine if we were getting Jordan versus Bias?
Every year.
Oh, that was brutal. Yeah. No, that's a really, really good one. All right, Mike, what else do you have in the NBA for us?
So this one is a little bit interesting. Hurricane Hugo strikes the Virgin Islands. Hits it pretty hard. It destroys the one and only Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Oh, I know where you're going here.
A certain Tim Duncan, who was training for the Olympics, who was favored to win and medal in the Olympics, can no longer train and decides to turn his focus onto basketball.
Wow. And Tim Duncan, obviously we know what he did at the NBA level. He wins five titles. Phenomenal, changes the San Antonio Spurs from the almost to no, they're legit champions. Also, don't forget what he did in college. He was phenomenal at Wake Forest.
Yes.
And a guy that when we look back at the era, think of the guys that Tim Duncan kept from winning titles. He stopped Shaq and Kobe. He stopped LeBron James. Tim Duncan was really, really good, and it all could have changed if he's a swimmer. How in the world are you, by the way, going to be a 6'10 swimmer?
It's a total advantage. It's not fair to the other. You jump off the blocks and you're halfway there already. I don't get it.
The reach is ridiculous. I realize you've got to propel a lot more. But my goodness, he had a reach advantage.
But it's amazing to think of some of these guys and how good they were at other sports. Just pure athleticism.
Yeah. Yeah. And you look at Duncan. Here's a guy. Nobody's going to outwork him. Might be in the pool. Might be in the gym. Nobody's going to outwork him. No, Tim Duncan would have been great. That's a great one. Because how different would the NBA have been without Tim Duncan? I mean, David Robinson, I love David Robinson. He needed Duncan.
Yep.
I love Ginobili, Parker, Greg Popovich. Hey, Greg Popovich is a great coach. He hasn't won much without Tim Duncan in the lineup.
That's a fact.
No, that's a really, really good one. And Tim Duncan changed the NBA landscape. He changed the college basketball landscape because when he was at Wake Forest, all of a sudden Wake Forest was a team you didn't want to see.
Right.
You didn't have the night off. Even if you were a Duke or a Carolina when Tim Duncan was there, because he was that good. Now, that's a great one. I'm going to go over to another great, and this we might have the same one. We talked a little bit about Michael Jordan and the Bulls. We have a number of what-ifs when it comes to Michael Jordan. I've actually got a couple. But let's go back to that 1984 NBA draft, because the Houston Rockets are on the clock first. They take a guy we've already talked about. Houston big man Hakeem Olajuwon. Hakeem's amazing. Obviously, you take him number one. I don't know that I would change that even now. How could you change that? Hakeem Olajuwon is an amazing player. But the Portland Trailblazers are up next, and their thinking was, well, we already have a guard in Clyde Drexler. We already have a shooting guard, so we need a big man. So they take Kentucky big man Sam Bowie. He's okay. He's not like a garbage player. This isn't a monumental bust, but he was often injured. And with the third pick, the Chicago Bulls take North Carolina guard Michael Jordan, who might be the greatest player of all time. Now, what if the Blazers say, you know what, forget positions. Let's just take the best guy on the board. For the record, that's how you should approach every single draft, is let's just take the best guy on the board. But what if the Portland Trailblazers select North Carolina guard Michael Jordan?
Jordan and Drexler.
You don't have to sit one of them down, right? They can play together.
Yes.
You find a way to get talent on the floor, don't you? Mike's a little bit closer to Nike. He's right up there at Nike headquarters. And here's the other thing to think about. Let's say Michael Jordan goes to Portland. Michael was having to go through the East. He had to get through the Celtics. He had to get through the Pistons. He had to get through the Knicks. The Western Conference at that time was not that way.
No.
He would have had a much easier path. He has guys eventually, like Terry Porter and Jerome Kersey and Duckworth, that was a tough team. You're telling me Jordan wouldn't have found a way to win a lot sooner in Portland than he did in Chicago? Because people don't realize this.
At least get to the finals.
Yes. People don't realize how bad Chicago was when Jordan went there. They were crap. They were one of the worst teams in the league. They were, I would say, the Cleveland Browns, but the Browns are better now than the Bulls. The Bulls were one of the worst franchises in sports when Jordan went there.
For a while.
For a long time. They were terrible. They were like a laughingstock. He goes to Portland, a much more respected team, under a much better coach, much better players around him. Jordan might have done more in Portland than he ever did in Chicago. As weird as that sounds. Because the Western Conference wasn't as tough as the East, he would have had a much easier path. We talk about this every year at the draft, and you and I have done draft shows, and we talk about the draft. You take the best player. You find ways to get players on the board. I don't care what position they play. Painful.
Yeah.
Yep. Goodness.
Well, following the same lines, and you know, you said you've had two or three involving him, and I'm sure this is one of them as well. Whether it was management, whether it was his dad's murder or whatever, what if Michael Jordan didn't retire the first time?
Yeah, and that's the other one that I have.
Do they run off 6, 7, 8 in a row, 9?
That's a tough one. That's a really, really tough one. Because remember, when Jordan retires in 93, they did lose Horace Grant. They didn't pick up Dennis Rodman. So there were holes on that roster. There were problems with that roster. Here's the one thing in watching The Last Dance that really stood out to me. How much all of that took out of Jordan to go win the titles. When you're watching him go beat whether it was Phoenix or Seattle or the Lakers, he had so much on him. All the outside stuff, all the media, all the press, just being attacked, it would have been tough. And I'm not saying I will never bet against Michael Jordan.
No.
We've seen it too many times. He always found a way to win. But that would have been tough. That would have been really, really tough because there was so much on that guy. And I think they get through the East. I think they beat the Knicks because Mike just found a way to beat the Knicks. What happens in the finals against, say, Houston? Against Hakeem Olajuwon, who the Bulls would not have had an answer for. They didn't have Grant. They didn't have Rodman. Are you playing Bill Wennington on Hakeem Olajuwon?
He would eat him for lunch.
Yeah, it would have been tough. But at the same time, I'm not going to say, well, no, Michael wouldn't have won. I'm not going to bet against Michael. But my goodness, that would have been amazing to see. If he racks up 7-8 titles in that time, man, that's asking a lot. Because that was such a wear on him.
Well, you could see, again, referring to the documentary there, just the physical and emotional letting loose after winning the titles. I mean, it was incredible to watch.
What I wonder, does he win maybe against the Rockets? And maybe he wins 4, he wins 5, and then he doesn't beat the Jazz? He falls off later in his career because it's worn him down. And then you actually saw Stockton and Malone.
The Jazz were good.
They were really good. Stockton and Malone are highly underrated because, well, they didn't win a championship. Are you kidding? Did you see how close they got? Maybe the Utah Jazz are the biggest beneficiaries of if Michael doesn't retire.
It's very possible.
Maybe Charles Barkley wins a title with the Suns because Jordan's worn out. It was so much on him. Again, could have changed things drastically if Michael doesn't retire at that time. I honestly think, as weird as this sounds, his retirement when he retired in 93 is the reason he wins those next three. Because it was just so much on him. I won't bet against the guy. Man, that would have been tough.
Yeah.
Biggest team that might have paid for that whole thing is Utah Jazz. Maybe they would have won too.
That's very, you're right. You're absolutely right.
As bizarre as that might sound. You have anything else in the NBA? If you do, we'll take it. If not, I've got something else. Let's move over to kind of college football NFL territory because I've got something over there that is a little bit weird. I have, like I said, an NFL college football. What if back in 2005, we had a free agent quarterback who had taken a really bad injury to his shoulder. But what if the Miami Dolphins doctors had signed off on Drew Brees having a healthy shoulder? Because I want you to think about the dominoes that fall here. If Drew Brees doesn't go to New Orleans, obviously the whole thing with Hurricane Katrina. And the magic that was around that team, and the New Orleans Saints win a Super Bowl. We're old enough to remember how bad the Saints were.
The Aints.
Oh, they were
horrible. Paper bags on their heads.
One of the worst franchises in history, in anything ever. They were terrible. Take all that away. They don't get their Super Bowl. They don't get their redemption. All that stuff goes away. But that's not all. Because Brees goes to Miami to be coached by Nick Saban. Does that change college football completely? Because Nick Saban, if he has Drew Brees, maybe he never goes to Alabama. Maybe he stays in Miami because he's starting to actually win some football games. He goes to Alabama. He starts a dynasty. And here's the other thing to think about. You could have had some really crazy rivalries. You could have had Drew Brees versus Tom Brady. You could have had possibly Nick Saban versus Bill Belichick in that AFC East. Not to mention what happened with Alabama and all that.
Could you imagine Brees and Brady for all those years?
Oh, that would have been so good.
Twice a year.
With a division that we have since seen has been garbage, and Brady waltzed the championships in that division, even when he didn't. No, if the Miami Dolphins sign off on Brees' shoulder, NFL history, college football history could have been vastly, completely different. The Crimson Tide of Alabama, as good as we think they are, remember, they were kind of floundering a little bit at the time. They couldn't find the guy. They could still be looking for that guy. Alabama might not be the juggernaut that we think of them now, because remember, like the Mike Shula years. Those were lean years for Alabama. They weren't exactly reeling off, you know, championships every year. Drew Brees changed college football. He changed the NFL completely.
The dominoes.
So insane to think about some of the things that could have happened just by one quarterback getting through a physical. And Miami wouldn't sign off on that. And as a result, Miami, the Dolphins' history is, I mean, they've been terrible. They've done nothing. They're still trying to figure it out now. A lot of things could have changed drastically on the
well, and ironically, they've got an Alabama quarterback now to try to turn them around.
Yes, and they're trying to figure things out. A guy coached by Nick Saban. I'm telling you, Mike, it's a small world, but I wouldn't want to paint it. What else do you have in any of the college football or the NFL?
What if this hits close to home, but it is far-reaching. What if the Colts don't heed to Elway's demand, bluff, whatever you want to call it? What if they call his bluff and they say, nah, I don't think you're going to go play baseball?
That's a great one.
And I believe he would have. I believe he would have gone and played for the Yankees.
I think he would have too. And I think he was more than capable of it because he was having some success with them.
Again, this is like you had just with college and pros. This is a multi-pronged situation here. I think he could have been a very good all-star baseball player.
We forget how good of an athlete John Elway was. Because when the last time we saw John Elway, obviously we see him now, he's just drunk. Who knows what he's doing. But I mean, before that, the last time we saw Elway playing, he can't move. He's kind of older. Yes, he had the helicopter, but it's more on grit and determination than the athleticism. Go back to like 85, 86, 87. He's running past cornerbacks as a quarterback. He was a freakish athlete. He would not have just been an average baseball player.
He would have been a five-tool player.
Yes.
The arm, ridiculous. He could hit for power, hit for average. He could field, and he could throw. I mean, it was unbelievable how good he was. And yeah, he just got the crap knocked out of him. That's why our lasting memories, or most previous memories, were of him walking around with, you know, bone on bone in the knees and, you know, biceps repaired, and just unbelievable the punishment he took. But yeah, he was an incredible athlete.
And how long of a career did he have in football? So he played from 16 years? How much longer is that in baseball? Because he's not taking those beatings.
No.
He puts together a 20-year career pretty easily.
Yep.
And like you said, a really, really good career. No, John Elway would have been a phenomenal player in whatever he played. He was that good of an athlete. Hey, next week on The Dose, we need to finish up this conversation with Mike about some of the biggest what-ifs in sports history. We still had a few more to get to, and I don't want to cut this short, so we're going to finish this up next week. You know, I want to talk about a few what-ifs concerning a few of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. I want to look at a few losers that were really, really close to being winners. Just a slight tweak here or there, and it could have been a different story. And we even have a what if in sports history that might have changed the history of the entire world. Plus, we will, of course, be doing our best to keep you up to date with the latest in sports news that is coming out and keep you up to date with what we hope is the restarting of some major sports very soon here in the United States. Hey, don't forget to go over to YouTube, subscribe to our Daily Dose channel, look for our Daily Dose logo, and I will leave links everywhere for you so that you can be sure to find it. Have to say thank you so much to Mike from Castle Rock for stopping by and talking some sports history with us. Can't wait to finish up this conversation next week. And thanks to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails you send. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for subscribing to that YouTube channel and giving us some positive ratings there. But more than anything, thank you so much for sharing the show with someone that you know. Maybe it's a friend, a coworker, a family member. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great week, everybody. I will see you all next Wednesday.
Well, the good Lord didn't bless my wife with all 10 fingers. She's only got pointer and thumb pinky.